So thanks so much for joining us. Several things obviously going on at once at OLCC. Let's go with the easy stuff first. Talk about the name change.
Yeah, well, after since Prohibition, we've been the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. But, you know, we took on marijuana in 2014 election, and 2015 started rolling with it as a program. And, you know, that industry we built of our licensees to, you know, a $1 billion market last year. It's half of our mission. It's an important part of who we are at OLCC. And we submitted to the legislature a 170-page bill that changed every reference to our name. And August 2nd, we'll become the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. So our initials don't change. Got some government efficiency there. It's saving our fee-paying licensees a little money.
So I was going to ask you how much, and you've already said a bunch of time being taken up with cannabis. Then how about yours, for that matter? I mean, are you spending a great deal of your time on cannabis where it was primarily liquor?
You know, I came to the agency in, 13, right? And I expected to learn a lot about liquor, and bowel measure passed in 2014. I spent inordinate amount of time learning about marijuana with the rest of the state and country, quite frankly. So it has slowed down on the marijuana side, but because we've been a growing agency, you know, I don't think I've seen – my career spans back with state government to 1985. I don't think there's been an agency that has so consistently grown over the last, you know, 5 years like we have. You know, we're up – when I started there, we were roughly 240 employees. We're roughly double that now.
So House Bill 3000 just passed, signed by the governor on July 19th, it looks like, provides several changes. Lay out what House Bill 3000 does.
Yeah, 3000 was really the combining of some cannabis work. So it doesn't all fit together, right, if you talk about it. It's not all about enforcement, or it's not all about quantity. But it's, I think, about three things. The first thing was we took to during the course of the session, this one, something that was planned before the session, the discovery that there was in the CBD products that you find in the marketplace, in the stores, at the gas stations, 7-Eleven, that manufacturers were concentrating THC into them from legally produced hemp at 0.3, but you could get a concentration of THC that was higher in milligrams with that, then you could get out of our, you could walk out of one of those stores with more milligrams of THC than you could one of the retail marijuana shops that we license. Amazing, you know, people were shocked to learn that.
So you're buying a CBD product, but you're getting high from it potentially.
Yeah, yeah, and there was, you know, lax regulations. The 2018 Farm Bill really was, you know, wide open authorization without, you know, any regard to or much regard to administration. It provided for interstate commerce, which has been very concerning around these items for human consumption. And the second part of what was going on there was, if you take CBD, the oils that are produced from it, and you sort of run it through a light acid bath, say vinegary, right, a light acid bath, it turns the CBD into a delta-8 THC molecule. Well, then they were using that. The Farm Bill, ostensibly, sort of a tangential legal argument, you could use everything from the hemp plant to put into items. Well, that'll make you high too. And everyone says it's very chill high, it's less than delta 9, but you can concentrate that up. So, you know, we needed some regulation on that part of the marketplace. So House Bill 3000 took care of that issue as best we could, as quick as we could. So it provides for total THC testing that we can then push into a serving size for what hemp was supposed to be, 0.3 THC in those products. And so we were requiring a greater test for the THC, certificate of analysis testing at the existing labs we have that test for marijuana. And then we prohibited any items that were untested from being sold to minors, which was shocking here, right? We spent so much time in our system prohibiting minors from getting into marijuana shops, and yet you could go into – kids could go into the grocery stores and come out with more THC than you could buy out of our shop. So very concerning to the public. You know, shocked. We were shocked. I was shocked when I learned about it. Legislators certainly were. So we've acted quickly to close that loophole with the best technology we have readily available, and then we'll work at perfecting that. So the governor signed the bill on Monday sometime. I was notified at 10 o'clock, so I don't actually know when she signed it. But we had our meeting, commission meeting at 1 o'clock Monday, put the immediate rules into effect, not only for that, but for another part of the bill around enforcement and what we're out here doing in Southern Oregon today.
Okay, let me get to that in just a moment. Yep. I want to remind our folks, we're talking to Steve Marks, who is the executive director of OLCC, now the Oregon, soon to be the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. We can't take phone calls or emails because we pre-recorded the interview with Steve Marks when he was in Southern Oregon. So let's talk about that part of it. I mean, this is a real enforcement move that will last for a while, a bit of a sweep, both of grow sites and media, it appears.
Yeah, well, we're just starting implementation, and, you know, surprisingly, the government, the region asked us to do work down here. A lot of legislative support. I understand you had Jeff Golden, Pam Marsh on last week around this, and there was a lot of community concern about illegal growing of marijuana under the guise of hemp. And, you know, Southern Oregon has a long and storied history with illegal cannabis growing, but I came down here 4 months ago and took a look at what was happening. We haven't seen anything like this down here. This is pretty, you know, the community's concern, I think, is you got a down hemp market and you got unprecedented investment in going into the hemp business. And you saw the rapid investment of these hoop houses going up across the community, concerns about water, the environment, labor, you know, in general, criminality, and then, you know, whether this was marijuana or hemp. So they were looking for a way to, you know, have a deterrent and enforcement. And these ODA grows that we're working on down here in partnership with them as a part of their program.
We're Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, yes. Sorry about the acronym. You know, we're supporting them in going out and doing some testing to see if these plants are hemp or marijuana. And we're, you know, doing it at a 5% threshold on THC. You know, and if it's hemp, it's supposed to be 0.3% THC. So we've given ourselves a lot of margin. We're really not looking if it's on the edge of hemp. We're looking to see if it's really commercial marijuana being grown out there. So, you know, this is a prove-up moment.
You've mentioned criminality just now, and you have also in releases from OLCC talked about cartels getting involved. What does it appear to be is going on in terms of who is doing this work?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when you start talking about, you know, drug trafficking organizations and cartels. But, you know, it does seem to be a semblance of associated activity, right? You see similar kinds of hoop houses being built in similar kinds of regions of Southern Oregon with similar structures to them. And then, you know, you might see a different kind of approach in Cave Junction area. So, you know, I think law enforcement believes there's clear association between these folks. It's off, you know, the thing about cartels is, you know, they don't give you a business address and a name and you can see it, right? You got to be able to investigate those things. So I think there is vast concern that there is cartel operations happening. If you listen to county commissioners in Josephine County or here, you know, you get a lot of discussion about what's happening on those grows. You know, there's forced labor on those grows, that there are, you know, illegality in the use of water, firearms, intimidation of neighbors. And really, my concern, or one of the flags for me that got me down here to look at this, was when I had some of our stalwart OLCC licensees, some of those folks that never wanted to be regulated by us, right, that are part of our system, were actually calling me, and you could tell they were scared about what was happening out in the rural regions of Oregon. There was fear in their voices, and that got me interested in getting down here and seeing for myself, for our agency, what was going on. And quite frankly, I believe we have a problem down here.
Steve Marks, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of OLCC, that as of August 2nd will become the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission, getting into more regulatory positions with cannabis and hemp, for that matter, as well. We can't take your phone calls and emails because we pre-recorded the interview when Steve was physically in Southern Oregon a few days ago. So you get an actual regulatory hand over hemp now in OLCC with House Bill 3000?
So we are working in support of the Oregon Department of Agriculture. It's their program. We happen to have a field force and people power, and my marijuana industry has an interest in not having illegal growing going on. So we're using our resources to support field testing for their registrants, soon-to-be licensees in the future. So we're out supporting them with taking samplings from the fields, and we're going to try to do all grows through this cycle.
So not a spot check. All hemp operations in Southern Oregon.
All hemp operations in Southern Oregon is our objective, and I think we're, with our resources, combined resources, we're going to be able to meet that. Of course, you know, some of the first crop that came off some of those hoop houses is already out the door. You know, we're a little behind the curve there, but this is good run through for getting the industry to pay greater attention to the accountability that that program should have. And it's a good moment for us and for law enforcement to be able to coordinate for next season so that we can not be in the position we're in this go round.
So you're able to spot check THC levels in hemp. How fast and what's the equipment like?
Well, the equipment's very cool. It's the same equipment that Josephine County and I think Jackson County law enforcement have. It's now being employed across the country, and it's just a field check unit, and it's held up in court for its results. I'll give you a result in about 8 minutes. And so we're working with those to we purchased several of the machines, 7 of them, that we brought to the regions. We'll probably deploy them long-term around the state and utilize them, but we got them advanced so we could do this work. And we've got our folks now certified on them. They're very easy to use. So we got the perfect system to be able to get out and, you know, like everything good in America, you pass the test to show you're qualified, and we're having them take the test.
I don't know how far into the process you are as we talk. Based on what's been sampled so far, what are you finding? Are people in compliance with their hemp? Are they showing too much THC?
I can't. We did one day's run, and you know, we were testing our ability to get there. We took some of the softer, easier approach sites and got a few tests yesterday. So I don't really have anything to share that's indicative of what's going on out there, you know. We'll test the premise, the theory that, you know, it's a hemp plant's more elusive than Bigfoot in Southern Oregon, right? But I think we're going to find a considerable amount of hemp and a lot of hot marijuana that's commercial as we test. But we'll be figuring out how we report those results publicly. Quite frankly, I think we will be doing some sort of weekly report maybe once we get into doing this, but I think it'll take us a few weeks to move to that status.
It's 8 weeks of work that you're planning down here, is that right?
At least 8 weeks, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, then that'll cover all the hemp operations. And so here's where things get confusing to the general public, and I have to wonder if it gets confusing for regulators as well. You've got the hemp, you've got the legal cannabis, you've got the medical cannabis, you know, and then you've got stuff coming from hemp with this Delta 8 THC, which can also get you high even though it's not supposed to. So is it getting as confusing for you guys as it is for the general public, or I'm presuming for the general public?
Yeah, it's very confusing, and it's going to be whack-a-mole because there's over 200 cannabinoids associated with the marijuana cannabis plant, right? So, you know, we've bifurcated a plant by a federal definition. It's really artificial. It's all cannabis. Same plant, so we create all of this confusion because it all looks the same, packaged the same, used the same. Legislators know, my commission knows, and that my industry knows. I'm a big proponent of a single system to manage the cannabis plant. They use the testing to determine what markets it goes to, whether it goes to an adult use market or whether it's generally available or whether it's a medical product. But there's no reason to trifurcate the management and definitions of the plant. So we'll see what the federal government ends up doing as it moves to legalization. I do think I work with a lot of folks around the country, other administrators. There's a lot of energy amongst those folks that have to try to regulate this plant to pull a system together. And I actually think the industry itself, the business side of it, would like to see that as well. But, you know, we've got a lot of structures to move to a more single system approach.
Steve Marks is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the executive director of the Oregon, it was the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. As of August 2nd, will be the Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Commission. We did pre-tape the interview, so we can't take your phone calls and emails while we're talking here. So at this point, does it appear that Oregon laws and rules keeping hemp production under control are doing so in a way that would satisfy federal law, or is that one of the major concerns that you end up afoul of federal law too?
Well, you know, the old principles that we had came out of Department of Justice Cole memorandum, right? And it was never actually an official, real, it was an ephemeral memorandum of the Department of Justice under which states took their guidance. And, you know, diversion, taking product out of state, is one of the key principles of that. Not only was it Cole memo, but we translated that into state law in several places. So, yeah, I'm really concerned. Here we're on the verge of legalization. We've spent a lot of time with the industry putting together a great system. I think we're the best in the country with the most licensees. Our agency and our work together with the industry, you know, we've become known for our policies, for being able to set standards. And this puts all that good work and reputation at risk now. And so, it wouldn't surprise me if the federal, this summer, and what we've done in management of our marijuana program through the years, you might remember Operation Good Harvest. It was year two when we were out looking at how they were harvesting marijuana from the fields. We want to make sure that they see us addressing our problems with diversion and illegal production.
So as you move through Jackson, Josephine, and I guess it's Douglas counties on this swing, how do you test the people, you know, get a regular regimen of testing and not have the people who are going to fail that testing and know it from scattering to the winds before you get to them?
So, you know, we've got a cooperative interagency agreement with the Department of Agriculture. And so we're going out in the Copelands. We'll report the results to them. They'll decide what they do with the results. So we don't notify people. We're not actually conducting all the testing in the field directly. We've got a lot of the machines at headquarters here and are bringing the samples back in. We will work through that process. Now, what I generally think will happen, and, you know, this Department of Agriculture's decisions, not really ours, because we're just a support agency in their role, is, you know, we're testing for 5% THC. We're also doing small plant testing in the ratios, and it uses a ratio and it's different. I'll just stick with the THC side on mature flowering tests. Probably what will happen, I think, is if you test below 5%, you're going to be dealt with through Department of Agriculture. If you test over 5%, it'll probably be a matter referred to law enforcement.
And so the other part of this, though, is that how do you get eyes on places that are not official, that are potentially illegal grows, got no permits of any kind? I mean, are you doing flyovers? Are you driving past fields and going, wait, that looks like our stuff?
Well, so, a lot of these fields, it's not like the old days when they're on public forest lands, you know, back in the hills. A lot of the locations are known, just, you know, you can grow hemp legally and not be a part of the, and not be growing marijuana illegally. So law enforcement can't get a presumption. But we're looking to see what's planted out there. A lot of law enforcement, we know, others know, public officials, permitting agencies know where these grows are. So a lot of them you can't see from the roads. But House Bill 3000 also addressed one of the key issues here, and that was that you couldn't get a presumption that a crime of growing marijuana illegally was there because people would claim it was hemp. Well, House Bill 3000 basically creates the null set grow. If you're not in our OLCC licensee and the license there, if you're not a medical licensed registrant, if you're not an ODA hemp registrant, if you're not a home grow, if you're not in any kind of state program certified and you are growing cannabis, not marijuana, cannabis, it's a Class A misdemeanor. So that'll give the opportunity for law enforcement to get on and get some control over these grows that no one had responsibility for and no one had accountability for. You know, it was, as you probably heard, it's a lot, and the marijuana community knows that the public safety community, citizens, it's a little bit of ring around the rosy, right? Whose grow is it? And then can someone do something about it? And it's pretty crazy the way we set up that process. So this cuts through it a little bit. So for those ones that are left, law enforcement can now do something about it.
Are there any tools that got left out of House Bill 3000 that you would have liked to have had to kind of get things shipshape in cannabis and hemp?
Well, I won't say I would like to have had them, but I'll point out one policy that sheriffs here are advocating for that speeds up their work and saves time and energy and effort. When you get a determination that it's hot marijuana, these membrane hoop houses, a lot of times they have to take each plant out and destroy it. So if you could, once you found them, say that was contraband, and take down the temporary unpermitted shelters, which the fire marshal can order on these membrane structures that are unpermitted, that would speed things up with all the grows they got to look at and the few resources they had. That's both time and money there. So that's something I know they're looking for to improve it, and it may be reasonable to take a look at that in the future. But House Bill 3000 did not allow that.
Just a couple seconds left. Do you feel like you're getting a handle on things? I mean, it's obviously gotten pretty wild, it sounds like.
You know, the community here asked for something, and the government came. I'm really proud. I mean, how many times do you see that happen quickly? So I'm proud of what we've done. We're in the field. We're here. We're making it happen. We're going to have a workload that generates other people's workload that slows us down. But I think everyone's committed to make the best effort, and that's what we could do this year, and we're on it.
Steve Marks, Executive Director of the OLCC, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks. Appreciate the time.